Israel carries out new airstrikes on residential buildings south of the Gaza Strip, killing at least three more Palestinians while injuring several others. The UN Secretary General has condemned Israel's killing of civilians and strikes on the Gaza Strip as unacceptable, saying they must cease immediately. And Russia says it's achieved certain goals in a special military operation in Ukraine and has severely damaged a Ukrainian military machine. Hello everyone, thanks for tuning in to World News. Now, Israel has carried out fresh airstrikes on Gaza, targeting an apartment building in the southern part of the coastal strip. Attack has so far left at least three people dead and several injured. It's also resulted in complete destruction of the apartment building. Al-Quds Brigades, which is the military arm of the Islamic Jihad movement, confirmed that one of its commanders has been killed in this attack. This is the third day of Israeli aggression on Gaza. Regime started its attacks on the territory on Tuesday, and since then, over two dozen Palestinians have been killed, including several senior members of the Islamic Jihad movement, along with their family members, including many women and children. Now, Palestinians have fired barrages of rockets on occupied territories in response to the regime's assaults. Israeli military claims that it's intercepted the rockets, but media reported that building was hit in the town of Sidorat. The Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations has strongly condemned deadly Israeli airstrikes that targeted residential buildings in the besieged Gaza Strip. Riyad Mansour has urged UN Security Council to shoulder responsibility and take action against Israeli crimes. He's also expressed hope the ongoing attacks on Gaza will end immediately.
Of course, we condemn this crime. We condemn those who committed these crimes, particularly killing large number of children and women, and we believe that it is the duty of the Security Council to condemn these crimes and to pronounce that those from the Israeli side who planned these crimes, who have committed these crimes, should face accountability and should pay for their crimes. We sincerely hope that this aggression to stop against our people immediately. And we sincerely hope that the Security Council and the international community can condemn in clear terms the killing of children and women and to go after those who have organized this massacre against them and to make them face justice and pay the price that they deserve. We will see what the Security Council will do after 3 o'clock, but we will continue to keep knocking on the door for the Security Council to shoulder its responsibilities. They have many resolutions. We need protection from this savage attacks by the Israeli army and the settlers, whether in Nablus, in Jenin, in Jericho, in Jerusalem, in Ramallah, in Bethlehem, in Al-Khalil, and in every part of the occupied Palestinian territory. And definitely, we need them to stop their aggressions and attacks against our people in the besieged Gaza Strip, as we have seen since, you know, the early hours of yesterday.
Meanwhile, the UN chief has condemned killings of civilians and Israel strikes on Gaza as unacceptable, saying must stop immediately. Spokesman for Antonio Guterres said Israel must abide by obligations under international humanitarian law, including proportional use of force. Farhan Haq added, regime must also take all feasible precautions to spare civilians and civilian targets in its strikes. Haq said closure of the Gaza border crossings by the regime has prevented the entry of vital foodstuff and medicine into the besieged enclave. The Arab League has also called on the International Criminal Court to complete its criminal probe into Israel's war crimes and crimes against humanity. Body said that Israel has committed various crimes, including settlement construction, aggression against cities, killing of civilians, and forced displacement of Palestinians. Now, Russia says it's achieved certain goals in its special military operation in Ukraine, stressing operation will continue. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said Russia has severely damaged the Ukrainian military machine. He, however, admitted operation has been very difficult. Peskov said Ukraine's continued shelling of eastern parts of the country taken by Russia demonstrates the need to continue the operation to push back pro-Kiev forces. He added Russia's launched countless missile strikes against military targets throughout the country. Ukraine has accused Russia of hitting civilian targets, an accusation Moscow denies. And now, following a quadrilateral meeting in Moscow, foreign ministers of Iran, Russia, Syria, and Turkey have agreed to prepare a roadmap aimed at promoting relations between Damascus and Ankara. Marina Kortanova has your story.
Foreign ministers of Iran, Russia, Syria, and Turkey agreed to prepare a roadmap for developing relations between Damascus and Ankara. Relations between Ankara and Damascus soured after the foreign-backed militancy broke out in Syria in 2011, when flows of Syrian refugees flooded Turkey. The safe and dignified return of Syrian refugees was one of the key principles for the Moscow talks.
It has been a key principle for all the countries present here to contribute to a safe and voluntary return of refugees and internally displaced persons to the places of their permanent residence in Syria, as well as to ensure their right to receive support. It appears important to start discussing the issue of restoring disrupted transport and logistics ties between neighboring countries and resuming trade and economic cooperation without any barriers.
The participants also discussed the U.S. measures in creating a so-called Free Syrian Army, which used ISIS militants and other terrorist organizations against Syria's legitimate authorities with the aim of destabilizing the situation in the country. Russian and Syrian militaries have recently discussed the issue, agreeing on a model of joint action in that regard. The sides also discussed illegitimate unilateral sanctions applied by the U.S. and its Western allies, which block the provision of international humanitarian assistance to Syria, including through the U.N. The head of the Russian Foreign Ministry drew attention to the fact that the U.N. humanitarian plan for the current year for Syria was funded by 8%, but the emergency appeal of the same U.N. to provide assistance in the territories not controlled by Damascus was immediately paid almost in full.
The talks in Moscow can be called historic. Iran and Russia paved the way for the negotiation process in Syria and made great efforts to ensure that this meeting took place. Moscow has demonstrated that its conditions are realistic. It was supported by Iran in this, which has done a lot to save the sovereignty of Syria. The meeting of the Syrian minister and his Turkish counterpart gives hope for the establishment of calm in the country. Turkey had to come to terms with the fact that Bashar al-Assad's power will remain. We have witnessed a reset in relations and what the collective West has been trying to prevent in every possible way.
The process of normalizing relations between Ankara and Damascus was launched on December 28, 2022 in Moscow, when first consultations were held between the heads of the defense ministries of Russia, Syria and Turkey. Earlier, President Erdogan invited President Putin to hold a trilateral meeting with the participation of the Syrian leader. This summit, according to him, should have been preceded by negotiations at the level of representatives of the special services, defense and foreign ministers.
The foreign ministers of Iran, Russia, Turkey and Syria warned that their countries will not allow any external interference in regional affairs. They expressed readiness to boost their fight against terrorism, saying they will be in full swing to ensure security. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
A two-day conference dubbed the New World Order Geometry has kicked off in the Iranian capital with the presence of attendees from dozens of countries. The event has been inspired by leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution's call for universities and academics to play a key role in the creation of a new world order. Matthew Abbasian reports.
An international conference on the New World Order Geometry has kicked off in Iran's capital, Tehran. Hosted by the University of National Defense, several high-ranking Iranian officials, as well as over 180 scholars, experts, and thinkers from 360 countries, including China, Russia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, Oman, Syria, and Iraq, have attended this event. The two-day event discusses issues related to the formation of a new world order. Addressing the conference during the inauguration ceremony, Chief of Staff of Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Hossein Bagheri, said the Islamic Revolution has been one of the pillars to fight against the U.S. hegemonic agenda around the globe. Bagheri also said the U.S. attempts to rule over the world have ended in failure.
The governance of the world by hegemonic powers will fail. The signs of the decline of the U.S.'s power became obvious after the pullout of American forces from Iraq and Afghanistan, the remarkable reduction of U.S. troops in West Asia, as well as the U.S.'s confusion of the deployment of military forces to West Asia, south of China, and west of Europe.
Iranian Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf was also among the speakers of the opening ceremony. He said the world order is witnessing a change in favor of the oppressed, in which the Islamic Revolution plays a key role.
At the beginning of this meeting, when we all look at it fairly, we understand that if such opportunities are provided today for the humanity, the Islamic society, and the Islamic world, we will witness a change in the new world order for the benefit of humanity, freedom, and Muslims.
In recent years, different geopolitical developments have led to the decline of the West's unipolar hegemony. Iran, as one of the most important actors in the regional and global stage, plays a key role in the new world order.
Last year, Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei announced that the world is on the threshold of a new order. This international conference is a testimony that Tehran is not only serious about the issue, but intends to play a major role in creating a new multipolar world order. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Ongoing talks between Sudan's warring parties to reach a truce has reportedly made some progress. Now, according to some reports, Army and the paramilitary rapid support forces are close to a deal. Reported breakthrough comes days after no progress was made in Saudi-sponsored negotiations. Talks are aimed at securing an effective truce, which would allow access for aid workers and supplies to the country. Now, there have been several ceasefire attempts so far, but none have held. Earlier, heavy gunfire and airstrikes continue throughout the capital, Khartoum, and adjacent cities. Nearly a month of conflict has left at least 600 people dead so far and over 5,000 injured. Conflict has also created a humanitarian crisis, displacing more than 700,000 people inside the country while forcing thousands to flee to neighboring states. The European Union's foreign policy towards Africa is slated as the humanitarian situation in Sudan deteriorates. There have been calls throughout the European Parliament for the bloc to provide asylum to Sudanese refugees amid heavy clashes between rival military factions. Jerome Hughes reports out of Brussels.
EU leaders are accused of failing the people of Sudan. The 27-nation bloc's weak foreign policy in Africa has allowed tensions to develop into chaos and carnage, according to some legislators in the European Parliament.
We must understand that hoping for the best is not sufficient. If we do not engage constructively and in a timely, effective manner, we will always need to run for cover when it is already too late.
It's the rapid support forces versus the Sudanese armed forces. Rival generals, once allies, are battling it out.
The West were happy to legitimize a de facto military dictatorship because this is the arrangement that has served their financial interests and the interests of the IMF and the World Bank for many years.
In the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, hundreds of people have been killed and thousands injured. The situation in Darfur and other regions is also dire. When it comes to African nations, the West is accused by critics of only ever having been interested in pillaging natural resources, such as gold, diamonds, and oil. At least 450,000 people have been forced to flee their homes in Sudan since war broke out on April 15th.
Let us not allow for a new tragedy, or at least do the utmost of our efforts. If the EU wants to live up to its values, this is the time to go for our limits.
Foreign powers are competing for influence in Sudan because of its position on the map. Apparently, the EU has taken its eye off the ball.
Don't make the mistake to only focus on the war in Ukraine. All kinds of leaders seize the opportunity because they see the European Union as a soft power entity.
The EU has opened its doors to millions of Ukrainian refugees. The bloc is being criticized for not providing safe routes for those escaping Sudan.
I hope that this will be a matter for the meeting of the Foreign Affairs Council, which takes place this weekend. It's currently not on the agenda, I would urge the Commission to try to address this.
Some commentators claim Washington is pouncing on the crisis with an aim of implementing ideological changes by removing Islam from Sudan's constitution. Once again, the US is accused of interference to try and further its own agenda. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
And now, as Pakistan's government has called on the army to help end 2 days of deadly unrest throughout the country sparked by Imran Khan's arrest of Adnan Nasimullah, a senior lecturer at King's College London, so he has said hasn't ruled out the possibility that Imran Khan will return to power someday.
The main question is whether these arrests and these charges will prevent him from actually running for parliament and as the head of the party in the coming election. So this is almost a kind of a sideshow compared to the sort of question of whether Imran Khan will be able to return to power. I think it is really open-ended what's going to happen, and I think it'll depend a lot on negotiations sort of explicitly with the judiciary, but also implicitly with other state institutions, and of course the government, about the sort of nature of his candidacy given these charges. After all, actually, the previous Prime Minister, Nawaz Sharif, right before the elections in 2018, was sort of charged with corruption, arrested, and so disqualified from office and from running for parliament.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
Muscle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
De-dollarization is increasingly making headlines, and you don't have to look too hard to find examples. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Financial Times, central banks around the world are shifting away from the US dollar and turning their attention to gold as a safe haven asset, the chairman of Rockefeller International, Rocker Sharma, has said. Prices for the commodity have surged 20% in the past 6 months, with demand coming not from the usual suspects, such as large and small investors, seeking a hedge against inflation and low real interest rates, but from heavy buyers like central banks, Sharma wrote in the Financial Times recently. According to the investment expert, regulators are sharply reducing their dollar holdings and seeking a safe alternative. Central banks now account for a record 33% of monthly global demand for gold and are ramping up gold buying more than at any rate since data began in 1950, Sharma added. He explained, "This buying boom has helped push the price of gold to near record levels and more than 50% higher than what models based on real interest rates would suggest," adding that clearly something new is driving gold prices. Sharma pointed out that 9 of the top central bank buyers are in the developing world, including Russia, India, and China. Not coincidentally, these three countries are in talks with Brazil and South Africa about creating a new currency to challenge the dollar, Sharma noted. He attributed the rush for the precious metal to increasing sanctions pressure exerted by the U.S. and its allies, with as many as 30% of nations facing international penalties, up from 10% in the early 1990s. Sharma argued, thus the oldest and most traditional of assets, gold, is now a vehicle of central bank revolt against the dollar. Some countries began to seek alternatives after seeing Russian assets frozen abroad and the country cut off from the SWIFT global financial messaging system. Sharma wrote, suddenly it was clear that any nation could be a target. According to the expert, the U.S. saw sanctions as a cost-free way to fight Russia, but in reality, the weaponization of the dollar has come at a cost for Washington, as even allies such as Thailand and the Philippines have started to look for alternatives for dollar. Meanwhile, Press TV noted, Argentine President Alberto Fernandez and his Brazilian counterpart, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, have vowed to devise a mechanism to use their local currencies in bilateral trade amid a growing trend of dumping the U.S. dollar in trade deals by many countries. The left-leaning leaders of the two main Mercosur Southern Common Market partners met recently in the Brazilian capital to explore ways to boost trade and dump the U.S. dollar. The meeting was long, difficult, and we will carry out many more meetings, Lula said alongside Fernandez, spoke to the press. I made a commitment to my friend Alberto Fernandez that I will do every and any sacrifice so we can help Argentina in this difficult moment. Fernandez said they have made the decision to help make sure that Brazilian companies continue exporting to Argentina, and they had asked us to do some homework, which we have already done and have to do with the necessary guarantees. The proposed plan involves a line of credit to finance Brazilian companies that export to Argentina with the intention of avoiding use of the dollar, said Brazil's Deputy Minister of Economy, Gabriel Galipolo. Galipolo declared that his government proposed the creation of a special line of financing for Brazilian companies exporting to Argentina using local currencies and thus maintain the flow of bilateral trade between the two Latin American economic heavyweights. The official further explained in an interview with the local Globo News Network that the use of the U.S. dollar for trade had caused the country to lose billions. Galipolo underlined, in the last 5 years, due to Brazil's lack of mechanisms to finance its exports and Argentine imports, we have lost approximately $6 billion of space in trade balance with Argentina to China, which has been providing financing mechanisms in alternative means of payment, such as swaps or giving credit to the exporter. The deal with Brazil, which is Argentina's largest trade partner, comes as Buenos Aires' economy looks fragile after a sharp devaluation of the local currency late last month and a drain of U.S. dollars from central bank reserves. Under the new agreement, Argentina and Brazil intend to exclude the dollar as their payment currency and use a mechanism similar to the swaps with China for foreign trade. Argentine importers will thus be able to pay for their purchases in peso, and the Brazilian government will convert the payment for their trade deals into reais. The development comes amid efforts by a growing number of countries across the globe to ditch the U.S. dollar in favor of local currencies of trading partners. The global trend to substitute the U.S. dollar with local currencies in trade transactions continues to accelerate as more nations have taken steps to ditch the greenback. Argentina announced last week that it will pay for Chinese imports in yuan instead of dollars to preserve its international reserves. In a meeting in Buenos Aires with China's ambassador Zhu Xiaoli, Argentine economy minister Sergio Massa said his country will be able to program a volume of imports in yuan worth the equivalent of more than $1 billion from next month. Massa added the South American country will program a volume of imports in yuan worth more than $1 billion from next month, which will replace the use of U.S. dollar. Meanwhile, RT wrote in this regard, new sources of non-dollar finance are emerging in the world. There are new bilateral agreements to trade and lend in currencies other than the U.S. dollar. Even more importantly, major oil trade buyers and sellers, Moscow and Riyadh, as much as Beijing and New Delhi, are agreeing to trade it in non-dollar currencies. These deals are destroying one of the main pillars of dollar dominance since OPEC quadrupled and then doubled oil prices in the 1970s, giving countries around the world a major reason to demand and hold dollars. Needless to say, claims about the attractions of U.S. finance were exaggerated. As far as most of the world was concerned, rather than providing beneficial productive investment, the U.S. dollar-denominated financial system only unleashed torrents of short-term hot money that has only profited mostly Western speculative investors while regularly wreaking havoc on the rest of the world's economies.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Dear ladies, welcome to another episode of your own program, Muslim Lady. Well, wherever you are, I hope you're doing well and everything is just going so smoothly. I am Asma. I have the honor to be your host for today's episode. And in here we have Sister Zainab with us. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome to your program.
Walaikum assalam. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. And again, it's a pleasure to be here with you and with the audience, of course. So, well, sister, I don't know how much you agree with me, but as for myself, I think that women are just more prone to superstition. And I'm searching for the reasons.
The many research that answer is that, yes, women have been more superstitious than men. There are many reasons. The answer to your why is some say that they have lower rationality.
Oh, my God.
And unfortunately, some say they have lower intelligence.
No, this one is not true.
Yeah, I also disagree with this one because there are some research that answer that. And
what an illogical research.
Something that could be a little relied upon is that they depend on their intuitions more than...
This one, yeah. A big like to this one.
Yeah. In many parts of the world, like, there's a lack of education.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not self-dependent. And while you're not self-dependent, you get kind of being dependent on each and everything around. So
you mean in the areas that women are not educated?
Yeah, because these things come from the areas where we see lower education rates, or where we see the dependency of women is on their men totally, or where they are not more explored. It comes from that. Unfortunately, even in India as well, we have this idea that women should not be given higher education. And recently I was just hearing this from some Pakistani friend that when they say she wants to go for higher education, the answer comes, what for? What she needs higher education for.
What so unfortunately, thing to hear in today's, you know, life.
But unfortunately, you would see that happening in Asian countries, like in that of what I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember, like, when my mother suggested us to shift to an area which was a little, you know, backward from the city. Just for some reasons, she wanted to go there to a remote place. And the moment we shifted, I was the only graduate girl in our lane. I was the only graduate girl. And the more I was outspoken, outgoing, I was considered, unfortunately, as not a very good girl in the society. Why? Because I was outspoken. Why?
So
because
they
I was
looked outgoing. You down.
Yeah. Just because the amount of degrees I amassed, the looking down increased.
So still there are some areas in this world where uneducated women are, you know,
preferred over the educated ones.
Yeah.
Even in our marriages, you know, Sister Asma, you will be amazed to hear that sometimes educated men, unfortunately so-called educated men, come and they marry uneducated women. They prefer them over those who are educated.
Which in itself needs an entire episode to be talked about.
Which in itself is a superstition.
Yeah.
This is a superstition that men carry, you know. It's not only all the time. What is a superstition? Any illogical thing happening. It's not just because sometimes we just conclude superstition into black magic and those things. Those are there. But every illogical thing happening is a superstition. So here men are superstitious. I won't say that uneducated women should not be, they should not get
respected,
be getting
yeah.
respected or getting married. I'm not against this, but like, you know, having this kind of weighing level in the society.
Having this notion that an uneducated woman is a better material, I guess.
Better choice.
This is very sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as you were just counting the list of reasons, I agreed more and more with the fact that because women rely more on their intuition. But before we go on some more of aspects regarding superstition and women, let's go for a break and then we'll be back. Sister Zainab, we are talking about why women seem to be more prone to accepting superstition, following them or practicing them. And then you counted a number of reasons. And then I said that if we consider the fact that they depend more and more on their senses and feelings and intuitions, So this is going to solve the entire issue, I guess. That's why they believe the superstition more and more.
Yeah, that's also the case. And apart from that, there are more certain reasons. I would like to mention men in this program, like mention very few points. Like they have this sense of winning or to have a personal gain. And for that, to achieve that personal gain or to achieve that sense of control, they kind of stick to some nonsense things like kind of black magic and other things just to gain that power of control or, you know, to win or to have that personal gain. So even men are involved.
I guess if they make a research, a given number of people, they take men and women and then ask them about superstition, I guess the amount of women believing the superstition is going to be more than men trusting those superstition. That's why I'm saying that maybe this is the truth, that women are more prone to accepting and believing superstition. And we said why. Because they go with their heart more than their mind. I'm not saying, of course, that they do not care about the logical aspect of things. I'm just saying that since we're more sensitive, we care more about our feeling. And it's a talent, I guess. It's an ability to go for the sixth sense.
Yeah.
As we...
It is a talent. But at the same talent leads you to the superstitious things. Like we said, having this dependence on intuition leads you to being superstitious. Like there's this scholar called Grave. He says that the root cause of being superstitious, especially in women, is association. Humans tend to create links between their thoughts and feelings and actions and different objects and symbols. So yeah. This association of, you know, linking things in between.
Yeah, yeah. Putting everything beside each other just like you're solving a puzzle.
Yeah. You're talking about women. It's like they do these things when they mostly feel like uncertain, stressed.
Yeah, stressed. Yeah, maybe that
or
is
or lacking control
reason.
In the things again.
Yeah.
And
she wants to make the head and tail of what's going on.
It's actually completely a practice or a belief that results from ignorance or the fear of unknown, sometimes trust in magic and chance, like you so much trust into the magic or chances that you kind of become so superstitious, or like the false conception about so many things and
emotion, you know? I will talk about that after the break. Let's go for a short break, and then after that, I'll have something to say about the emotion and feelings of women having to do something with superstition. So thank you for staying with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Talking about superstition and women. Well, we talked about quite so much of reasons, and then I told you that emotion is another factor that makes women more involved in superstition than men. Why is that? Well, because, for example, if somebody comes to you and tells you, if you do not do this or that, then you're going to suffer from, I don't know, something sad or bad in your life, then the probability of a man believing that is less than a woman believing that. Why? Because a woman is more, you know, she's filled with too much of emotion. And then no matter how much she tells herself, okay, this is just nonsense, but then there is this trigger inside her that would tell her that, what if it's true?
It's either the cultural traditions or it's the individual experiences.
Yeah.
You know, for example, it depends which society you grew up in, which area you grew up in, and what kind of a particular culture or religion they had, which would carry these beliefs. You know, unfortunately, in religions as well, there are so many superstitions, or I may say that many superstitious things have been actually mixed or put into the religion forcefully. Maybe that's a politics or something like that.
But in our narration, in the Islamic heritage, we have always been asked to avoid superstition.
Avoid it, yeah. So we are not actually authorized to be believing
in Islam as a whole is against superstition.
Because, you know, we are so much being told about to take care of your health. And if you become so superstitious, as per the science, as per the studies, it will lead you into the OCD.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you will...
Obsessive disorder.
Yeah, you will have obsessive compulsive disorder and obsessive thoughts regarding things. And this is referred to as magical thinking as well.
Mm-hmm. So, and maybe even depression.
Anxiety disorder, yeah. Yeah. Anxiety and stress, exactly. These things come from those superstitious and illogical things. Like, since it's a cultural thing that what you grew up in, unfortunately, like, there are some things, I don't know if it's in your culture or not, like, if a black cat crossed your way, and then your day is going to be, you know, a worse one.
Yeah, like the raven.
Yeah.
If you see a raven, something bad is going to happen.
And
to
interestingly, in some cultures, crossing of a black cat is considered to be a good luck.
Yeah.
Again, like this, we had this concept of breaking a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if a mirror breaks and if you look at your own reflection into it, then maybe you're looking into, you have a distorted reflection now.
Yeah.
Your life will be distorted because now your reflection in that mirror was distorted because mm-hmm. it broke down. So we had these. And number 13 is considered as to be unlucky one, and 12 is to be considered as a lucky one.
Yeah.
These have no logics, no basis in Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Women, as you said, why we are talking about women, why women are so much prone to it, because they want everything to be going perfect.
But men, maybe, are less...
They don't live in a fantasy world.
Yeah.
They don't live in a fantasy world. Yes, women do. Yeah, that's again another reason that women mm-hmm. may be like that. And we got to be educating ourselves, be that from Islamic perspective and be that from scientific perspective. Have to be looking for our logics behind the things and have to increase our rationality, basically. The more rational we behave... in terms of these superstitious things and looking for the logics, the more we will be like getting to real world and, you know...
coming out of the fantasy world.
Exactly, because Islam says so much, أَفَلَا يَتَّدَبَّرُونَ أَفَلَا يَتَّفَكَّرُونَ. Why don't you think? Yeah, why don't you actually, you know, contemplate things? Why don't you realize? Why don't
so
you,
thinking is very
pondering
important.
Pondering is very important. Yeah. So increase your rationality, increase your... education in all perspectives, that will help us.
Yeah, thank you, Sister Zainab, and thank you, dear listeners. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Until another session, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com irib.org/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
In the wake of Western sanctions on Russia, China has pushed to conduct more trade using its currency, the yuan, in an effort to reduce its reliance on the US dollar. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. China's Global Times has covered this story and tells us more. Bangladesh and Russia have agreed to use the Chinese yuan to settle payments for a nuclear plant that Moscow is building in the South Asian country, a Bangladeshi official has confirmed. The two countries have chosen to use the Chinese currency, the yuan, for settlement in a project that does not involve China. This marks another milestone in the yuan's internationalization. Bangladesh and Russia agreed to use the yuan to settle payment also adds new evidence to the rising de-dollarization trend. It's an indisputable fact that an increasing number of major economies, both developed and developing, are striving to ditch the US dollar through innovative cross-border payment and settlement mechanisms, signing bilateral currency agreements and promoting the diversification of currencies. The Russia-Bangladesh Pact to settle payments in yuan will be conducted through China's Cross-Border Interbank Payment System, or CIPS, according to media reports. As the yuan's internationalization keeps gaining pace in recent years, more and more countries are accepting yuan payments through this system. The yuan-centered payment network, which was launched by the Chinese Central Bank, the People's Bank of China, in October of 2015, has been rapidly gaining popularity among the expediting yuan internationalization, with 79 direct participants and 1,287 indirect participants, covering 109 countries and regions around the world, as of the end of February of this year. While announcing its joining in the China's Cross-Border Interbank Payment System, CIPS, in March, the Brazilian bank Banco Bocom BBM said that its aim is to reduce the costs of commercial transactions. NBD Bank, a Russian bank for small and medium-sized businesses, joined CIPS earlier this month, said that the move helps to improve quality of its services by reducing the processing time for yuan payments. Choosing to use the Chinese yuan, the currency of the second largest economy and top trading partner of more than 120 countries, to settle payments through CIPS, other countries are also clearly in consideration of economic efficiency rather than geopolitics. Against the backdrop of an accelerating de-dollarization wave, many Western media outlets have portrayed the Cross-Border Interbank Payment System, the CIPS, as a yuan-driven alternative to the dollar-dominated SWIFT system. It must be pointed out that this is misleading. The CIPS system is introduced to satisfy the inherent demand for cross-border payments amid yuan internationalization process. It is not designed to target any other currency or any other system. Evidently, de-dollarization is the self-inflicted result of America's own actions. For a long time, the irresponsible monetary policy of the U.S. and Washington's reckless sanctions, backed by the hegemony of the U.S. dollar, have severely impacted the economies of many countries in the world. The choice of these countries to bypass the U.S. dollar in international trade and economic cooperation is just to avoid the risk brought by the hegemony of the U.S. dollar. Even U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has admitted that U.S. financial sanctions are endangering the dominant status of the U.S. dollar. As the U.S. continues to impose sanctions on other countries at will, targeted nations are seeking alternatives, which over time could undermine the hegemony of the U.S. dollar. Janet Yellen was quoted as saying by CNN. The association between the self-inflicted de-dollarization and yuan internationalization is typical zero-sum thinking. In face of the U.S. sanctions and irresponsible monetary policies, other countries' choice to bypass dollar settlement with other currencies should be respected. More importantly, the legitimate development of the yuan's internationalization should be respected. The dollar hegemony has benefited the United States at the expense of other countries for far too long. It is time for the U.S. to reflect on its irresponsible policies and irresponsible practices and its abuse of the dollar hegemony, as well as the Cold War mentality, rather than further attempting to discredit the yuan's internationalization and other countries' independent choices. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. For more than a decade, Beijing has been trying to reduce its reliance on the US dollar, motivated by risks emerging from the US economy, such as the financial crash of 2008-2009 and the desire to boost its own sphere of influence. But in the last year, a drive to insulate China's economy from dollar-based sanctions has emerged as possibly the most important incentive for decoupling from the US dollar, as China looks to prepare for the possibility of conflict with Taiwan. After the start of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, one of the most powerful tools for inflicting economic harm on Moscow was to essentially cut the country off from transactions based on US dollar, limiting its ability to trade with other countries. But as well as pushing the Kremlin, there has been an unintended winner from Western sanctions regime, the Chinese yuan. Last year, the share of Russian imports paid for in yuan rose from 4% to 23%. In February, the Chinese yuan overtook the US dollar as the most traded currency on the Moscow exchange for the first time in history. China's push to boost the internationalization of its currency predates the war in Ukraine, and although the yuan is still far behind the US dollar in terms of global activity, between March of 2001 and March of 2023, its share of the trade, finance market, the multi-trillion dollar ecosystem that underpins 80% of world trade, more than doubled, according to data from SWIFT, an interbank messaging platform. China is also encouraging other countries to adopt the yuan for international transactions. Argentina and Brazil recently reached agreements to pay for Chinese imports in Chinese yuan rather than US dollars. In April, Bangladesh announced that it had approved a payment in Chinese yuan worth $318 million to settle part of a Russian loan that had been used to finance a nuclear power plant development in Bangladesh. It is a rare example of the Chinese yuan being used for an international transaction that does not involve China. Daniel McDowell, a China fellow at the Wilson Center, a think tank, says, "To date, international use of the Chinese yuan as a payment currency has primarily involved China on one end of the deal. To do business with Russia, foreign partners do not really have alternatives. They will have to consider using less traditional payment currencies like the Chinese yuan and the Russian ruble. China's economy is far more intertwined with the West than Russia's is, and many analysts think it would be impossible for the West to punish China economically without inflicting massive self-harm. Still, China wants to protect itself as much as possible, and the internationalization of the Chinese yuan is one part of that defense. In March, a Chinese company used yuan to buy 65,000 tons of liquefied natural gas, LNG, from Total Energies, a French multinational, the first time that China's currency has been used in an international liquefied natural gas, LNG, transaction. Beijing does not want to be dependent on the use of US dollars for essential imports, so this is a key step in ensuring China's energy security. In an article published last year, Xu Jin, the chief economist at China Energy, a state-owned company, wrote that China must work faster to drive the internationalization of the Chinese yuan in order to protect its energy supplies in the wake of Western sanctions against Russia. China has also developed an alternative to SWIFT as well as a digital currency, the electronic Chinese yuan. These technological innovations are less important than the political factors that influence the yuan's international popularity, but they are part of Beijing's broad campaign to transform its currency into an attractive alternative to the US dollar. The campaign to decouple from the dollar is also linked to national pride. A recent report on China's quest for financial self-reliance notes that, by definition, China can't claim to be a great power if it continues to rely on the US dollar for trade, foreign borrowing, and the pricing of energy and commodities. But for China's leaders, a more prominent international role for the yuan needs to be balanced against the party's grip on domestic financial markets. Truly internationalizing the yuan would mean loosening the government's control over capital flows and allowing the market to play a bigger role in the currency's valuation.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.